Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rod Gontos.
Good afternoon, Orange County. Rod Gontos here with another episode of The Rad Life. And we are coming at you from the, I think I've used the infamous reference, so I'll use the illustrious reference today. Illustrious studios of OC Talk Radio from the Pinnacle Tower at the corner of Sunflower and Bristol. And Paul is, I'm going to apologize for Paul right now because he's losing his voice.
I'm losing my voice, sorry.
Yeah, he's losing his voice, which for some may be a godsend message, but for others it's not.
People are saying, oh, I can listen
to
that.
Oh my God, yes, we're going to have a show without Paul. But no, you know, Paul is an integral part of this show, has been for over 4 years, whether I like it or not. So, but today I wanted to kick off with saying a couple of things. First, thank you so much for your support and viewership and listenership. I'm always very pleasantly surprised by who is paying attention and who's listening. You know, when we sit in this room thinking nobody's listening, I always hear from somebody who says, you know, that was a really great show. Thank you for all the feedback on last month's show with the guys from Nuggets and Carrots, the jewelry shop that got
really
hit caught, in South.
That really caught people's ear.
It really did. And a lot of people listened to it, and it's a great story. If you haven't listen to that, go back and listen to it. You can find it on OC Talk Radio's YouTube channel. You can also find it on the Rad Life on Podbean. Rad Life is also on iHeart and on Spotify. So you have no excuse for not listening to it. But that's one episode that really was great.
We got to get you to turn up his volume over
okay.
there. He's number two from left to right.
Can you hear me now? Okay, great.
There we go.
So, yeah, it's kind of critical that our guests basically can hear the show.
Can I give you another announcement? You don't even know this here. They came back in after that show, and they're talking about trying to make a little, six or eight episode podcast arc where they could do it in more depth and tell that story in more depth. And then they're going to use that as a intellectual property, as they say, a vehicle to try and attract more interest.
Awesome, because their whole purpose of being on the show was to tell the story, which is an amazing story, but also the fact that they're writing a script to turn into a movie. And so go listen to that, and we had a couple of other great guests last month. This month is already booked, solid. Next month is already half booked.
So stay tuned.
So I will tell everybody like I always do, if you want to be on the show, you got to get to me sooner rather than later, because as it stands today, I probably have two, possibly three spots only available for November. And I am kicking off this month with the gentleman sitting across the table from me, Mr. Walt Lusk, retirement guru. Walt's company is Retirement Fortress. And I met Walt a couple of weeks ago in L.A. Doing a show for a friend of this show's, John Dade, who has the cigar networking, business networking group. And it was very fascinating. I said, you know, Walt, you got to be on my show. So here he is.
Well, thanks so much for the invite.
No, my pleasure, man. I think it's one of those topics that nobody really talks about. And, you know, we do pride ourselves on somewhat. What do you think, Paul? Loosely at this point, talk about baby boomers and aging?
I think we have nailed it. I don't know why it hasn't turned into a national term. But, you know, baby boomers started off being hippies. We're going to change the world. Then we became yuppies. We were going to build business. We went from one extreme to the other, and now we're just poopies. We're just pissed off old people here, you know?
Yeah, poopies. Poopies is a term that Paul has coined and has trademarked.
I like it.
Yeah, he's poopies. So even though his voice is going, he's still pissed off older person. And one of the things that most older people are actually pissed off at is the fact that they have woken up and realized, ooh, crap. Excuse the poopy crap reference, right? Yeah. But ooh, crap. You know, I don't know if I put enough money aside to retire, let alone stay retired, which Walt's always telling, it's not about just retiring, it's also staying retired.
Yep.
So today we want to talk about that. We want to talk about that because, you know, some people may have forgotten that we had a major meltdown of people's 401ks.
Too long ago.
How long ago was it?
2008.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, people.
Right? This is over a decade.
It wasn't that long ago. But it's a decade, but it's like if you think about it in terms of a life cycle, where you basically have worked all the way through to you're, you know, like let's say the retirement age of 65 or whatever, right? Or maybe 67 because you really couldn't retire at 65. You were working towards something.
Yep.
At least what conventionally you were told would be the case, which is basically do the right thing, put the money, buy the house, pay the mortgage, try to avoid things that, you know, people were trying to draw you into, like refinancing and other things and so forth. And guess what? I promise you're going to be okay.
That's what they promised.
And then you wake up one morning and you realize, I was fed a whole bunch of baloney, okay? And nobody is accountable for that. And I'm basically sitting here really concerned about my future. Really concerned about whether I can even stop working, let alone be able to maybe find a job that will hire me at this age, right? So all these realities just come compounded and on your shoulders when that economy turned. And here we are a decade later, but we tend to be a very forgetful people.
Extremely forgetful.
Right? And we don't really remember cycles.
But you know what? They told me they fixed it all. They fixed it all. That'll never happen again.
Right. So they fixed it all, and that's why you basically are held up in the citadel of solitude of yours with a business model that's basically going to carry you through your retirement. And I will use Paul for a minute here because it's a perfect example. Here's Paul. He's working towards, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, okay, with whatever voice you still have left, right?
Yes,
but
no.
But you basically are sitting there. You've got a couple accounts that you're basically representing, right? And you basically find yourself now on the out. Your accounts are dried up. I think, was it a pool company and a jacuzzi or a hot tub company?
Oh, yeah. The quick story is I had done PR for 20 years and found at the Great Recession, my business crashed. I'm in my mid-50s. And I had to reimagine not only find new clients, but I had to
reinvent
because the industry itself had collapsed because the media had collapsed. So I got you the Wall Street Journal. Now what? There's nothing left to do. So I lost clients and I lost the whole business I was in was upended.
Right.
And I started this really as a way to try and revive the PR business. If we can't find people to tell your story, we'll tell your story.
But then
that turned into a birth of a new business, a podcast studio turned into a radio station, live podcasting. And it was all that evolution thing. And I don't know really what day people say, well, how long are you going to do this? I don't know, maybe forever. I don't know that.
Well, you're fortunate enough to have found something or reconnected with something that you have a passionate pursuit for.
Yes.
And it happens to be financially viable.
Right.
Right.
But I look at, you know, you want to use my wife as a terrible example. She got laid off after 30 years in the banking business in her mid-60s. Mm-hmm. And they said, sorry, we're going to get rid of your position. She'd been in sort of an auditing kind of role. She'd been a branch manager and other things. And she doesn't get a retirement. Sure, her 401k was cut in half in those dark days. Mm-hmm. Still never came back. And so we're looking at, what does she do? And so she went to try and get some other bank jobs. And they're like, we don't want you. You're 65. You're supposed to be done. Done. I'm going to live to be 95. What is she going to do,
right,
and how is she going to
right,
pay
our,
for
our
it?
Whole, our whole reality and measure benchmarks of when person's productivity is over
right.
on, you know, but it's a real live concern and angst that people are dealing with all around us because we have an aging population. You know, we had the gentleman from AgeWell about a month or so, maybe 2 months ago, and we were talking about how it was going to be 1 in 5 that was over the age of 65 by 2025. It's not around, it's just around the corner, right?
Well, you do realize that over the baby boomer generation is still barely the largest entity group, and 10,000 baby boomers are retiring every day and will till 2040.
Well, and the larger population, this I think is something that doesn't get discussed enough. The larger population than even the baby boomers, because I'm a Gen Xer. We're kind of the lost in the shuffle bridge generation, right? But the millennials are actually a larger generation in number than the baby boomers.
Yes, they are. If they aren't, they're darn close and will surpass.
So listen to this. If you're a baby boomer today that basically are facing financial uncertainty, that you basically did everything right, mm-hmm. and you basically spent your life doing everything right with the promise or the vision that you're going to basically be able to retire to some level of comfort, not necessarily, you know, complete luxury and, you know, vacationing every day, but to a certain level of sustainable comfort through your swan years. The reality is that at 65, you're not really even done medically or life expectancy. Mm-hmm. You got at least another third of your life ahead
Absolutely.
Of you, probably, right?
Yep.
You're two-thirds done, basically.
Well, some people call it the lap of luxury.
Yeah.
The challenge is the lap of luxury is great until you stand up.
If you can stand up,
because
your bones hurt,
up,
right?
Because then your lap's gone.
Right, your lap's gone. So with that though, the thing that does what I was talking about that doesn't get mentioned is you got an added pressure. You got an added pressure in terms of workforce.
Yes.
Because you got a millennial
younger workforce.
Workforce mm-hmm. that is bigger than the baby boomers.
Yes.
That are technically competing along with the Gen Xers for those jobs that mm-hmm. baby boomers now are even at double jeopardy
yes.
of not being able to get that job. So you are faced with having to reinvent yourself, really survive by your wits, because your finances and your bank account ain't going to do it, right? And
yeah.
like Paul, you have to reinvent yourself.
Yep.
And what is out there that even allows you to go down that path? There are no institutions or people that are basically trying to do these encore career incubators or trying to encourage you to do that. And let's face it, majority of people do not have that gene to be entrepreneurially,
no, they don't.
You know, whether out of necessity or out of training.
Correct.
So the likelihood is a lot of the baby boomer population that is facing that financial crisis is doomed. And I don't see anybody really doing anything about it.
It's a dirty little secret. And let me jump in real quick in terms of the stock market. I've only heard this concept twice in my career. I've been doing this well over 30 years. And that is that the baby boomers, for the beginning of it, have put millions and billions and trillions of dollars into the stock market. And that's all fine and dandy and well and good and true. But when you have 10,000 baby boomers saying, hey,
I am
done putting money in the market. I have put all I can. I've scrimped, I've saved, and here's my retirement. It's now time for that to pay me.
Oops, sorry, we don't have it.
What happens is, and this has been scaring Wall Street for over 30 years because they obviously saw the writing on the walls, you have 10,000 people a day pulling money out of the market, mm-hmm. not putting any money in. Because, yeah, you have the millennials and the Gen Xers and such. They aren't putting as much into the market to make up that difference.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because as you are younger, your likelihood of investing and having sort of the wherewithal to be very conventional and very traditional about your investment and to put it into the market, okay, let alone that the millennial profile is completely different
yep.
from previous generations.
Yep.
It's more nomadic. It's more not about, ownership of things. We don't want need to. I don't want a car.
They never
I'll
even
use
cars.
Uber. It's on demand.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. It's not about. It's on demand. I'm going to use my money today to get what I need today. I'm not looking about in the future. Not that they shouldn't be. They should be. But where their mindset is as a millennial today is not. I need to get that single family home. I need
Correct.
To start building my equity. That's not where they are. So to your point, which is a fascinating point, I never really thought about it. You got a generation that is massive. That is pulling money out of the market
every day,
and you've got not a replacement or replenishment
nope.
of that money. So we are looking at actually a bigger crisis.
Yes, and the punchline is there is a giant sucking sound of all the baby boomers pulling their money out of the market.
Did you ever think about that, Paul?
I never did. It's an interesting fact because it's true. You know, we're going to be the longest lived generation in history as a group. We're going to live longer than any generation ever has, and we're not prepared for it
nope.
because we don't. 1 in 10 of us, roughly, last time I saw it, 1 in 10 of us has a pension.
Oh, yeah. Pensions went away in the mid-80s. It was funny. They changed one big word, folks, and it changed the whole retirement situation with one word.
What was the word?
In the mid-80s, and prior with corporate America, you had what was called a defined benefit. which means a pension. You work for us for a period of time, and then we are going to give you a retirement, a benefit, as a result of your commitment with our company.
For the rest of your life.
For the rest of your life. So
paid,
you have a pension.
You paid for it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You paid for it, but the company
wasn't
is on the
freebie.
Line. Wasn't a freebie, but the company's online for it. So I went from defined benefit to defined contribution. You see, the defined benefits were run by the insurance industry and has done phenomenally well over 100 years. And Wall Street said, hey, wait a minute, they're managing trillions and trillions of dollars. How in the world do we get into this game? So the IRA and the 401k came in, and the 401k was actually an experiment. It was for high compensated executives to augment their defined benefit, to augment their pension.
So it was another layer.
It was another layer.
Not a replacement.
Not a replacement. And then all of a sudden with the crash in 2008, and this started obviously in the mid-80s, and there was a gigantic crash. People don't remember that one in 87. Yeah. A lot of companies said, we can't do this anymore. We're just going to give you 5% matching on your defined contribution. So all of a sudden, the risk of retirement went from the corporation to the employee. Mm-hmm. And it unfortunately has not been a very successful experiment.
Well, there's another layer to this as far as baby boomers or aging population, which, you know, is 78 million people in this country alone.
Yep.
Right? Is the fact that they also spend less as they get older.
Yes, they do, because the kids are out of college and their house is paid for and
such. Well, and consumer products. Yep. I mean, you know, you're not buying new clothes every day. No. You don't have to be at the office every day. No. You know, there's sort of this upkeep component that's usually expenditure that is not being used. Mm-hmm. Add to the fact that you are staying in your home as long as possible. So there's no property tax increases. So there is that sucking sound again. There's no retail taxes coming in from that generation as high as it used to be. There's no property taxes because there's no change of ownership that's happening. All of that stuff is basically that sucking noise. And then additionally, for that generation, they have now additional cost impacts of things like healthcare,
yes,
medical expenses, mm-hmm. right? People don't realize that one of the largest group of fastest increasing group of people that are homeless are actually seniors.
Yes.
They're one medical bill away from basically being on the
Well, the number one cause of bankruptcies.
Medical expenses. So with that gloom and doom, sky is falling, has already fallen. We are basically crushed under the pieces of the falling sky, right? What can people do today to even try to survive, last? I mean, is it hopeless for that generation?
Absolutely not. It really is not. Unfortunately, my perspective, I actually worked with Wall Street firms in the early 2000s, and I saw how Wall Street worked and functioned from the inside. Okay. I was working with the principals of these small Wall Street firms. There were several in LA I worked with and established their retirement divisions, because the early 2000s was a disaster in the market. Mm-hmm. You had the boom of the previous decade, which was phenomenal, the 90s, and in March of 2000, we had what was called the internet.com bomb. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, everybody thought, oh my gosh, these internet companies really are pie in the sky, and they aren't going to produce. My favorite one was, if you want a quick story, was a company called eToys. Mm-hmm. eToys was a very large warehouse, one warehouse in the city of Commerce. And you would place your order, and some folks with shopping carts would pull all the inventory out, and then the bottleneck of shipping it out. But the day that company went public, they had a capitalization worth more than Toys R Us.
Yeah,
with brick and mortar, inventory, stores, goodwill, and of course it crashed really fast. So in March of 2000, the market crashed. Then we had 2001, and then we had the following year to recoup. So the first 3 years of the 2000s was horrible.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was that dot bomb. I mean, I remember the lead up to that, the unbelievably unrealistic, based on nothing, IPOs and valuations of companies.
Yep. Yep.
And then you also had a generation, speaking of millennials, you had a generation that was basically accustomed to switching from one opportunity to another. I
yes.
mean, the likelihood of somebody being in their job for 6 months before they got another opportunity for higher pay and moving, and there was no loyalty.
Loyalty at all.
There's no loyalty.
No.
And let's talk about that I want to talk about that for a minute, because the assumption was at one point that you as an employee and an employer, there was a time in this country when there was a sense of loyalty, that reciprocation of relationship
yes.
between the employee and the employer and vice versa. So not only did the employer start dwindling away the benefits and the reasons for that loyalty, and then basically that disintegrated. But then you also had an incoming generation that basically couldn't care less because there was no loyalty.
No.
They were not interested in basically working themselves to the bone, right? They wanted their free time. I mean, they would take extra time off versus bonuses. And they were saying, I really don't care whether you survive or not. I got another opportunity over here. I'm going to switch over. So you have a lot of people that at that period of time when the dot bomb happened that were sitting with resumes where the longest period of any kind of job time was maybe 6 months, 8 months. A year was like, wow, really? You're stable. You're there for a year. So all of these factors actually play into the fact, again, like we are – there is not enough replenishment going into the market with all this demand that's being pulled by baby boomers. So, yeah, I mean, people forget that. We're not.
Well, it's really the dirty little secret. I mean, Wall Street's known this, but they aren't going to broadcast it. Holy cow, you got 10,000 people a day pulling money out of the market.
They would have a run on their
own. Yes.
They would have a run. We would end up with another 1928.
They've tried some very creative ways to have it appear that it's going great.
So what if you're that baby boomer and you're not like Paul, where you can basically think yourself out of the box into something that you may want to pursue that happens to be maybe a reflection on what you did in college and you can make a go of it, plus the fact that the motivation and incentive is that your wife wants to kill you because you're sitting at home too long.
Well, right? what
can you do?
Let me expand that just a little bit, if I may. You have to understand, folks, one of the biggest financial commitments we make in our lifetime is taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Sam is in your back pocket and probably your front one too, always. And the point is, when you look at taxes and the tax code, especially today, the tax code was not written for the employee. It was written for the employer.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter whether you're General Motors or you're running a small business on your dining room table in your house. You have 45 different tax deductions legitimately that you can take, which means you're going to save a bundle on taxes. Oh my gosh, I'll get audited. No, if you don't take some of these deductions, you actually will get audited because the IRS will think it's a hobby versus a business.
Mm-hmm.
So get some good tax advice. So you're on the right track. Yeah, it could be anything. It doesn't matter. Networking, marketing, you can do sell something, whether it be jewelry or whatever.
Is that still true, or is it been better or worse given the latest tax reforms?
The latest tax reforms have helped a lot in one way, and that is that the floor, and again, I'm not an attorney, a CPA, but or an attorney either. The floor for taxable income starts at $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave folks that earn in that realm a huge tax break. It wasn't for the rich, for crying out loud. It was for those that are making $25,000-ish. Secondly, the problem was the deductibility of state income taxes, because that was one of the big deductions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ceiling on that, and it's, a lot of people call it the blue tax, because the more taxed states, New York, California, Illinois, etc., the deductibility of your big mansions is now gone in terms of all the property taxes and sales tax and income taxes. So when we get older, our taxes actually do go up because we lose deductions. We don't have our children anymore to write off.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have our mortgage to write off anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So people go, oh, my taxes are going to be less when I get older. Well, maybe because your income's less, but not from a tax perspective.
Right, and the value of your house has gone up. So even if you're not basically selling the house over a period of time, there will be an adjustment that will happen to your property taxes. So to your point, the numbers do go up.
Yeah, and for example, folks here in California have homes long enough. Prop 13 is a great thing, but you sell that house, or in some cases you refi it, that ability to have the lower tax rate is gone, and of course it's not coming back.
Well, and tell people who are not familiar with what Prop 13 is.
Well, Prop 13 was real big with the Jarvis, Howard Jarvis back in the day, and it was basically people that were older that were getting taxed too much on their homes because the appreciation was huge. They got a break and a lower tax rate on their home property taxes, so seniors are paying less property taxes than in someone who buys a house today.
No, so they got, assuming they, you don't refinance.
And assume you don't. Well, refinancing is okay, but you can't sell it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. But, and also, if you put it in a living trust, it's actually longer even while they're after they're gone. So, but the point is, if that property tax 13 tax rate on many seniors was actually the real rate it should be. Many of them can't afford to live in their house, even if they have it paid off.
So like I asked the question a few minutes ago, Walt, okay, so what does a person, what can a person do? How do they even start to re-protect themselves or at least try to secure some sort of viable retirement for themselves?
Okay, let me answer that if I can and go backwards and get a little backstory real quick. First off, let me address something that a lot of people should be aware of in any kind of investing from my perspective, and that's called the Rule of 72. Okay. The Rule of 72 was devised by a philosopher centuries ago, and Albert Einstein actually said it was the eighth wonder of the world, and it's compound interest. What it says is, how much am I making on my money? How soon, fast or slow, will my money double? Okay, if you're investing, you know, okay, I'm making whatever percent you're making, but what does that mean? I mean, how quickly or slowly is your money doubling?
Right.
The way it works is very simple. You take whatever interest rate you're earning and you divide it into the number of 72, and it will tell you how many years it will take for that to double. So, for example, if we pick on 4%, and you're earning 4%, which, interestingly enough, and over the long run lately has been Wall Street, then 4 goes into 72 18 times. So that means that your money will double in 18 years, meaning if you have $100,000 and you're earning 4%, in 18 years, you will have $200,000.
Right.
If you're in the bank and you're blessed with earning 1%, 1 goes into 72 years, will your money double. Now, the concept I work on is actually 7.2%, which means 7.2 goes into 72 10 times. So that means your money doubles in 10 years. So that means that, for example, if you're going to retire in 20 years and you have $100,000, then it's going to double once to 200, and then that 200 is going to double again to 400. So it's going to get four times what you started with in 20 years. So that's Rule 72. So, but the thing is, also with compound interest, it can work for you and can work against you. The two major ways it works against you is, one is your mortgage.
Right.
In the old days, if you bought a $100,000 house, you're literally paying $300,000. You're paying three times for that house, the principal, and then $200,000 in interest. And that's, again, one of the ways that banks can take our wealth by charging us incredible interest. Oh, yeah, you got a low payment, and it takes 30 years to pay it off, assuming you don't refi. But nonetheless, and the second is inflation. If inflation is 4%, which it really is, if you look at gas and the price of milk and whatnot, then that means that in 18 years, you might need double the money. And that's where the problem is because just because you retire doesn't mean the prices of things don't go up.
Right. You can't just look at the earning interest rate. You got to look at everything else that's also impacting your overall wealth, basically, or your overall financial situation.
And another thing is, in terms of growth, when you look at in your investing, are you investing something that's tax-free or tax-deferred? For example, if you've got a $500,000 in your retirement when you retire, going, whoopee, this is great. What you don't understand is, if it's in an IRA or a 401k, that means that Uncle Sam has not taken one penny out of that pile of cash because you put it in on a tax favored basis. You made the contribution and you got the deduction, and everybody goes, well, I need deductions. Yes, you do, but there's a point where in many instances it's not advantageous. So if you're in a 20% tax bracket, that's federally and state, and you have $500,000, what that means is literally $100,000 of that money isn't even yours. You don't even have 500. Yeah, 400.
Yeah, you do.
And so something came out later in the game called a Roth IRA, and some companies have a Roth 401k. And let me tell you a little story about that, the seed versus the harvest. Let's say you wanted to change careers, and you decided to go be a farmer, go back to basics, live off the grid, and you're going to grow corn. So you take $10,000, and you buy a big barrel of corn, and you're about ready to plant it. And who drives down your driveway but Uncle Sam, tax man? He says, hey, congratulations on your job, your career change. But since you did that, I got to collect some taxes. And you tell the tax guy, well, that's all fine and dandy, but I sunk all my money into this investment of seed. Can you come back? And he smiles and says, you know what? I sure can. So don't worry about it. It's all good. I'll see you later. So you plant your corn. And now, many months later, you're sitting on your porch and you are looking at all that green corn waffling in the wind. And you're just thinking, man, this worked out great. The weather was great. The fertilizer was great. The rain was great. The soil was great. I've worked my buns off. Here it is. And who drives down that road again with the bigger smile on his face?
Uncle Sam.
The tax man. Hey, remember me? Yeah, how could I forget? Remember I was going to tax you back then, but I got to tax you now. And so what we have here is he was going to tax you on the seed, which was $10,000. Now your crop is worth $100,000. So now he's taxing you on the harvest.
Yep.
And the question is, which, from just a taxable perspective, from your perspective, is less money?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously on the seed.
Absolutely.
What that means is it is much better for you to pay the tax now on the contribution than waiting and delaying it and kicking that can down the road on your growth, on the harvest.
Very good way to explain it.
And so what that means is if you can put money into an investment that's tax deferred or tax free on an after-tax basis versus taxable later, that's radically tax deferred, you are better off to bite the bullet now. That's what a Roth is. Roth means I am making a retirement contribution, but I am paying the taxes on that contribution now.
Right.
And therefore, you don't have to have what's called a required minimum distribution or RMDs later in life. And those RMDs can get very, very high. And if you forget when you're 70, oh my gosh, I'm 71, I forgot to pull out money out of my retirement.
Right.
It's one of the stiffest penalties in the tax code. 50% of what you were supposed to pull out is the tax.
Well, and you're paying it on the larger number.
Yes. But in more, let's say, for example, on your retirement, you were supposed to pull out $10,000 of your required minimum distribution. The penalty, if you don't, is half that,
$5,000.
So now you have to pull out $15,000 just for that particular
year.
Just
to cover year, the $5,000.
And can cover the taxes.
Ask you a question. So you have this IRA, traditional IRA.
Yeah.
And you hit 70 and you're supposed to pull it out. Who tells you how much you have to pull out?
The entity that you're with. And there's actually, you can look online and there's a rate. It starts out at just shy of 4%.
Yeah.
And then at age 90, it's 11%. And the theory is that as you're pulling money out, they want more money because your principal has theoretically been decreased. Okay. So,
you got to take 4% of it out?
Yes. And in round figures, you take 4% out for the first at 70. But here's one thing, another trick that the government plays. You can actually defer that withdrawal till you're 70 and a half. The problem is, in many instances from my experience, that means you're making two withdrawals the following year. And that may bump your income tax rate to a higher level. And that's one of the tricks that Uncle Sam does just to get more income tax out of you.
So this is just treated as income.
It's treated as income and your tax as income. So my recommendation, when you hit 70, don't delay it. Take it out now. Get in the habit of doing
There's no benefit to
it. And there's really no benefit.
And you take it out in one fell swoop or do you take it on a monthly withdrawal?
You can do either. They don't care. And let me tell you something else that people don't understand. Let's say you had five accounts. You know, you had an IRA and a 401k and a few other retirement accounts from previous employers. Uncle Sam doesn't care where the money comes from. You can pull an equal amount from all five of those accounts, or maybe there's one that you want to deplete faster because it's more aggressive or has less money or whatever. It doesn't matter. You can pull out all of that required minimum distribution
from
one account. They don't care where it comes from.
Right.
They just want
they want 4% of the aggregate, whatever your aggregate holding is.
Yep. Yep.
So again, that's the assumption there, Walt, is that I've got enough to do this with.
Mm-hmm.
What if I don't? What if I find myself at, say, 60? I've got 5 years before I'm going to be forced into some sort of retirement if I'm working for a company. I'm already non-marketable. I can't get myself into another job. I have never owned my own business, never done any entrepreneurial pursuit of whatsoever, right? And I'm looking at what I've got set aside, and I know, combination of cost of living, all of it, that I will not be able to sustain the quality of life that I have today.
And let me add one more
what
to that.
What can I do, if anything?
One more to that. The average baby boomer, when they hit 65, I've seen various numbers, but it's like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. That's all they got.
I haven't looked at the statistic for a while, but a few years ago, the average 401k was $78,000.
Yeah. Okay.
So this 401k experiment has been a dismal disaster.
So you got $78,000 to last you for the rest of your life here,
including Social Security.
Which we're saying, well, yeah, but I mean, that's not enough to live on.
No, it's not.
And is Social Security taxed or no?
Yes. And actually, if you make too much money, they have what's called provincial income, and they'll even tax it even more.
Right.
And even if you haven't invested in muni bonds, which are tax-free in the state you're in, they even hit you
And you get hit with it, by the way, on the insurance side, too. I'm going to tell you from personal experience with my folks is, you know, they're both – my mom never worked. My father retired, okay? They're both living. They have, you know, a decent savings set aside. And my mom basically needed medical treatment. They've got Medicare and all the supplement insurance and everything that they need. But she was diagnosed with lung cancer, non-operable lung cancer, and she needs to basically be on a chemo pill every day.
Yeah,
that chemo pill every day
is not cheap.
Is $100 a pill.
Yeah. Oh my goodness,
$100 a pill, $3,000 a month.
Yep.
on a person who, yep, is a senior in their 70s that basically don't bring in money on a monthly basis. They don't have major investment that's basically replenishing with dividend. Basically, she could not qualify for the savings. And it's such a racket because then there was a letter that a doctor could send, whatever, so forth and so on, to where she gets a substantial saving. But it's not automatic.
No.
And this easily, for somebody in that situation where they fall in that gray area between you're destitute enough that we will cover you and, oh, darn, too bad you got a couple of dollars higher than the number that would qualify you, that is a devastating cost.
Yes,
it is. And what is the alternative? This is what you
Canada. You'd be amazed how many prescription drugs are cheaper in Canada.
Well, I mean, but you know, the other
assuming
thing,
that's an option.
I'm venting for a minute because my poor mother, who's in her 70s, actually has to go through this rigmarole with the paperwork and requalifying for this thing every few months. This is a person that has a chronic medical issue that at the time when they are the most vulnerable and emotionally stressed out by this, are then forced to have to go through the system in order to qualify for something that is absolutely necessary for their survival.
You know what's going to happen, and I don't want to sound like alarmist, not with your parents because they're capable of doing this. A lot of people are just going to have to go without and they're going to die.
Oh, no, my parents are fortunate enough that we can at least sustain some sort of monocle of survival, quality of life, and have the wherewithal to go through this. But imagine somebody that has never faced a situation like this, finding themselves in the crosshairs of this thing.
You make $2,000 or $3,000 a month in Social Security. You have $70,000 in the bank, and you got to come up with $3,000 a month. You can't do it.
You can't do it, right? And it's absolutely not being discussed. It's absolutely unconscionable in my reality of what life should be, that we allow people that are vulnerable population. We're talking about 78 million baby boomers, people turning 65 at the rate of 10,000 a day. This is not a happenstance, odd case situation.
No.
There, if anybody thinks they are directly or indirectly not going to be affected by this, and as a Gen Xer seeing this happening to baby boomers, guess who's coming next?
Well, you know, what's interesting is...
And millennials are right after, and I don't see anybody stepping out of their way to do the right thing and fix this.
Nope. Well, what's interesting
is... There's no money in it.
A couple of other dirty little secrets. When President Roosevelt signed the Social Security law in, first off, he said...
Socialist.
Well, now I'm going to go down that road.
No, right? I'm being completely facetious because it's like, oh my God, socialist.
he said it would never be taxed, but of course, President Clinton changed that. But he said, okay, when you're 65, we're going to give you... whatever we're going to give you. What people forget is the average life expectancy when he did that was 267.
Oh, 2 years.
It was a Ponzi scheme. Give us all this money and we're going to fund your retirement until you die. And the forecast was 2 or 3 years
later.
What's
the average life expectancy now?
Well, it's like in their 80s.
Yeah. Easily mid to late 80s.
Yes.
Yeah. Possibly 90s even.
Well, if you live to be 65, there's an 80% chance you're going to live to 80.
Right.
Okay. And if you live to 80, there's...
Let's just break that down for people, okay? We throw out that number 65, we don't really think about it, right? That's when you basically become non-marketable, non-viable.
Yeah.
You're too expensive to stay in your job, okay? That you may now need as a lifeline for sustaining your existence, okay? You don't get to do that anymore. Maybe federally, government basically pushes that from 65 to 67. There's always conversation about 67, 69. 67 is probably more likely.
They're raising the age all the time.
69, we're too conservative. We're not going to go with that number, you know? But be that as it may, okay? That's not how what your life expectancy is. Your life expectancy is easily, let's say, just round it up. Let's say it's 89 or 87.
Well, I was going to say that's a little aggressive.
But let's just say 87.
I like to use 85.
Okay, 85. Fine, 85. 65, you're supposed to retire. 85 is when you pass away. You got 20 years.
Now, without a paycheck.
Think back.
So what do you do?
What are they
all going to do?
But hold on, I'm not done. Think back what 20 years means. Okay. Think back. Let's say you're 50. Think about where you were at 30 and what was achieved and accomplished and spent and incurred in terms of costs and expenditure and life changes in 20 years. That's what you've got in terms of time period from when you supposedly are supposed to retire that to where you're going to pass away. What the heck is that? That is not a short time period. How the heck are you going to actually sustain an existence that's of some quality that you want for that long a period of time when you basically have nothing really working in your favor?
Well, one of the cliche phrases, which actually is important, and that is to pay yourself first. Get in the habit of taking whatever you've got and pay yourself first. There's a book out called The Accidental Millionaire. And he was doing a seminar with a lady who was in her 20s and said, "Well, I have no money to invest." And he started looking and listening about her lifestyle. Every day she went to Starbucks and bought a Danish. Mm-hmm. And that was about $10 a day, mm-hmm. right? And if there's 22 business days in a month, that's over $200. Mm-hmm. He said, "Look, buy the Danish at the grocery store mm-hmm. and make your coffee at home. Mm-hmm. You're going to net at least $100. So I just found $100 in your budget that you could make some simple, not radical lifestyle changes, and now you've got $1,200 a year that you can put away for retirement. And if it earns X amount of percent, that's going to be worth, say, $40,000 when you retire. So is that cup of coffee worth $40,000 to you?" And the question is, and answer is, of course, well, no, it's not. And we make decisions like that every
all the time.
Day.
Here's the other thing. We're not encouraged to think that way.
No, we're not.
I grew up overseas, mm-hmm. and I came over here when I was 20, and I was fascinated. The thing that just hit me like a ton of bricks is that overseas, you saw ads for young kids basically putting money from their piggy bank into a mm-hmm. bank account. Mm-hmm. We have nothing. Think about what you see on TV. You have all these ads about spending money on medical pills, treatments, whatever. How many ads do you see have actually been encouraged saving? And there's a reality of why that isn't the case. Because if you actually encourage that, the whole consumer marketplace would crash.
Yes, we're a country of consumption.
Yeah, and if you don't consume, the economy doesn't move. We have it totally backwards. And
yes.
And when it comes to the point of time when you are now faced with this is because if she doesn't buy that Danish at Starbucks and 10 other people don't do that, that's money out of Starbucks' pocket. Starbucks stock goes down. The person leasing the location for Starbucks doesn't get that tenant to basically now commit to a 10-year lease. It is all a domino effect that is pushed by consumerism. I'm not fighting against or saying consumerism is bad. All I'm saying is there's no other alternative being pushed as a narrative. It's this is it. This is it. This is it.
Every
and what
day.
Happens when you don't have anything left to use to spend? Guess what? We move on to the next person who has the money.
So let's move back to my generation because I'm living it right now here. You've got $75,000 in the bank saved after all this effort. We've got no retirement coming in, so we're going to live on Social Security and $70,000, and we're supposed to make it last for 20 years. And those last 20 years are going to be the most expensive medically in our life. We're going to spend 80-90% of whatever.
Which those costs aren't going down. They're just going up.
Yeah.
Well, in terms of medical expenses, it's been proven that like 90% of the medical expenses you're going to incur your entire life are going to be in the last 5 years of your life.
Right.
It gets expensive.
All right. So at that point in time, are we too late? Are we just going to hang
well,
on?
Again... You have to find other ways, as you've done and reinvented yourself, Paul, of finding ways to make money. Take a hobby. and look at ways to convert it. I was dealing with a lady who did some amazing artwork, and I encouraged her to expand that while she was working, because one, it was going to give her more tax deductions, mm-hmm. and it's a business that could actually generate income when she retires. And that's, I mean, I know people aren't entrepreneurial. The only other thing is, do you think you're like, you like people, you like hanging out with people? Then there's always being a greeter at Walmart.
Right. And then, and we're giggling, careful, but yeah. that is in many cases, the unfortunate
thing.
Reality.
And let me tell you one other dirty little secret that Wall Street won't tell you about. And that is the break even amount.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
So if we look at, the last 100 years in terms of stock market crashes prior to the last 10 years to 2008, in average, there were 33 crashes over that 100 years. Mm-hmm. What that means is in every 10-year period, on average, there are 3 crashes and 7 ups. And we all know the market goes down a whole lot faster than it goes up. And the average crash was about 40%. If you look at the crash of 2008 from the Standard & Poor's perspective, mm-hmm. which is the benchmark of the stock market, it was 38%.
Close.
So it was darn close to 40%.
Very close, yeah.
The Dow went down 50% in 2 years. I know people that in July of 2008, June, July, were thrilled about what they had in the retirement. But in December, totally different story. Warren Buffett, who's a big investor, he said last year, be prepared mentally, emotionally, as well as financially to lose half your portfolio, because it is a mental blow. You're thinking about retiring and all of a sudden 40% of your retirement is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, well, you know, my financial advisor today, he's going to do things different than last time. Really? Do you know what that is?
And talk about how long it takes to make up.
that's my point. That's where we're going.
That's exactly point.
So, and talk about if it goes down 50%,
right on target.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you've got your $100,000 and on average the market falls 40%. So now you're with $60,000, right? Because
right.
it lost $40,000.
Right.
But that's also your rainy day fund. And maybe your kids need money, or your roof caves in, mm-hmm. or you need a new car, okay, and you need $10,000. You got hit twice. One, because the market took 40% of it away, and now you have need, you got to pull money out of that.
Right.
So you pull $10,000 out.
Now you're down to 50.
Now you're down to $50,000. And I ask people all the time, if you want to go back, you want to break even, you want to get that money that you've spent and lost back to your 100,000,
yep.
your 50,000 in this example, what a rate of return do you need to earn to get that 50? You want to guess?
It's
want
like
to phone a friend?
It's like 100%.
It's 100%. That $50,000 needs to double to 100,000. Mm-hmm. That means that you need to get 50% on money left. It has to work that much harder and earn 100% just to break even. And let's say that $10,000 in terms of an emergency is not an emergency anymore. That's your income.
Mm-hmm.
You need $10,000 out of that money to live. Well, guess what? You will never get your principal back. It's gone. And people do not understand that when they talk about Wall Street and the market has one major crash during their entire retirement, just one, their ability to catch up and have enough money at the other end is not
well.
Going
and the
to happen.
And the reality is that you're looking at three, potentially. So
it's, just one.
But it's unavoidable that
yes.
you're going to get
historically.
Your, my
you've
point
had,
is,
you've
my,
seen
my,
three.
Yeah, yeah. My point is, it's unavoidable that you're going to be faced with that reality
yes.
between now and your retirement.
Yes.
Okay. So what can a person do in those circumstances?
There's a strategy that I specialize in. It's been around for almost 30 years. That basically has the ability for you to invest in the market, but without risk and without loss. And the rate of return is actually higher than the stock market because there are no losses to recoup. So in other words, when the market goes up, you ride it up, but they take the hit and you don't. And yes, it's available, but your stockbroker isn't going to talk to you about it. The person about it. And I'd be happy to elaborate if you want to give me a call.
Yeah, how do people get hold of you?
And two ways. You can call me toll-free, 888-999-9258. That's 888-999-9258. Or I'm a Walt, as in Disney, Walt at retirementfortress.net. walt@retirementfortress.net, because there's ways to take and make your investments work harder for you so you aren't a greeter at Walmart or someone who's working in the electrical or plumbing department at Home Depot or Lowe's.
And before we're done, Paul, I just want to just touch really quickly. What do you say to people that basically are looking at their property, their equity, their home, and a potential reverse mortgage as being the savior of all their retirement woes?
Here in California, reverse mortgages are very popular with people that are asset rich and cash poor. And there's good and bad.
Which there's a lot of people who have owned homes.
There are a lot.
Yeah.
The reverse mortgage basically says we're going to take in a mortgage on your home of a percentage of the value, and we are going to absorb the payment. So your house is basically paying you. You're not paying it. And whatever interest that is accrued during that period of time, which is your lifetime and your ability to stay in the house, is added to the mortgage. So, for example, if you've got a $500,000 home, maybe you can pull out $250,000, $300,000, and you can do whatever you want to with it. You can invest it someplace else, or you can, you know, pull money out every month and live on it. And the interest that's accrued on that loan is added to the loan. So therefore, again, compound interest at that point is working for you and against you. It's working for you in the sense that you're not paying it, but it's working against you that it's added to your mortgage. So that means that once you pass on, let's say that $300,000 with interest and all that jazz is now $400,000, and the house is now worth, say, $600,000 due to appreciation, or $550,000, then the house is sold and the mortgage is paid, and whatever's left over, if any, you get it to your heirs. So it basically kisses a lot of the equity that's in the home that maybe mom and dad would have saved for the kids. It's gone.
Yeah. There's nothing for free.
No.
There's no free lunch. There's nothing for free. So just because you're being, you know, and it may be the only thing you have. We're not knocking it that way. But I just, again, being informed, being educated, know what you're dealing with, because the alternative is you go down a path, nobody's going to really tell you there's a cliff ahead. And then you find yourself standing at the precipice, and now you're going, oh my gosh, there's a cliff. How come nobody told me? So let's give your information again.
With reverse mortgages, just remember it's being more regulated as it needs to be.
And it is, yes.
And different companies charge different fees, and those fees are very different and very vast. There's some out there that are doing great, and some that are just absolutely outrageous in terms of their fees. And so in looking at reverse mortgages, I just caution you to be aware of what you're actually paying for that mortgage.
Well, you know, the other thing to also just point out is that we as a nation are, you know, there used to be a sort of an assumption that when I get to the point of a certain age, if I cannot afford something, between, you know, Social Security, there was some nets that would basically carry me, that, you know, I may take a hit in terms of my quality of life, but I would still be able to have a safe existence until I pass. Those are also changing in terms of regulations and what percentages you can get and the numbers involved, because there's a dire pressure on the whole system to sustain it. And there's not enough people paying into the system to cover the monies that are going to be needed to sustain the people who are now no longer paying into the system and are asking for the system to take care of them. So whatever you're doing out there, it is super critical to be engaged and involved in this particular conversation. And whether you talk to Walt or other people, but there are alternatives. There are alternatives, and you need to educate yourself. And I want to go ahead and give your information again.
Well, my direct telephone number is 888-999-9258, and you can just email me and I will definitely respond, walt@retirementfortress.net. And I've been a retirement specialist for over 30 years, and my byline is not only have the ability to retire, but as we've talked about, to stay retired.
The barbarians are at the gate, people. Build your fortress. Thank you.
Thanks,
see you next week. Thanks, Walt, for being here.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.